gotta understand something here. This music is the glue of the world. It holds it all together. Without this, life would be meaningless.
What are you getting so crazy about? It's just music.
For nearly 20 years, Spoon has been releasing one great album after another. Not bad for a one-time indie upstart. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. Britt Daniel and Spoon join us in the studio for a performance and conversation, and we'll review the long-awaited new album from hip-hop cult figure Divine Styler. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions. This is Sound Opinions, and Greg, you know, rock and roll has produced many reclusive cult legends through the years. I'm thinking of people like Skip Spence or Syd Barrett or Rocky Erickson, but hip-hop hasn't had many of those kind of larger-than-life cult figures. Divine Styler is one, and later in the show we'll review his first album in 14 years. But first, we have some music news.
That's from Taylor Swift's 1989, her 2014 release that dominated record sales. You know, Jim, if you'd asked me at the half-year point last year what album was going to dominate the year-end charts, I would have said nothing's going to top Frozen, that Disney soundtrack. It just seemed to keep selling and selling and selling.
I'd really be happy never to hear it again.
And, you know, you're going to keep hearing it because kids are just going to keep buying it. It's going to get re-released upon re-released. It's already sold 3.5 million copies, which is a healthy number at an era when record sales are not doing so well. But Taylor Swift, lo and behold, comes through at the end of the year, and in a few short months, 3.6 million copies of 1989 are sold, topping the Frozen soundtrack for the best-selling album of 2014 by a huge margin. I mean, the third and fourth place records weren't even close to what those two did. You have to go all the way down to 1.2 million sales to find Sam Smith at number three. And then the Pentatonix a cappella group with a Christmas album topping a million sales. So that makes only four albums in 2014 that topped the exalted platinum mark. Mm. Everything else, including Beyonce, the Barbra Streisand album, even the Lorde album, made the top 10 but did not reach a million sales last year. Now, you can tell where we're heading with the overall sales charts on this one. It is a bad year for music once a year in terms of physical sales. The good news for the music industry, audio and video streaming up 54%, 164 billion streams last year.
Wow.
And vinyl continues its massive resurgence,
Yay.
An increase of 52% in 2014. But everything else in the tank, Jim. Digital album sales were down 9.4%. Song sales were down 12.5%, and overall 257 million albums were sold, down 11% from the previous year.
Y'all know me, still the same OG, but I've been low-key, hated on by most these with no cheese, no deals and no G's, no wheels and no keys, no boats, no snowmobiles and no skis. Mad at me because I can finally afford to provide my family with groceries.
In 2000, Greg, Dr. Dre wondered if people had forgotten about him. They did not forget in 2014. At the end of the year, Forbes always puts out its list of the highest paid musicians, and Dr. Dre topped it, and he topped it in a big way. He took home $620 million
Wow.
before taxes, thanks largely to the deal that he made with his Beats headphone and streaming company and Apple. Number two on the list, by a margin, big margin less is Beyonce, who pulled in $115 million, in part from record sales, but as you said, she didn't do all that great, mainly from her Mrs. Carter tour and endorsements with a soda pop manufacturer and a fashion chain. Rounding out the top five are three boomer acts that made their money the very old-fashioned way with touring. The Eagles came in at three with $100 million made on the strength of their History of the Eagles tour. Bon Jovi ranked fourth with $82 million. And the boss, Bruce Springsteen, your hero, was the end of the top five at $81 million.
Also celebrating 2014 is the UK. The 10 best-selling albums of the year in Britain were all British acts. Pretty extraordinary when you think about that. Another British invasion on the way? I mean, that's what this could be signaling. You're looking at Ed Sheeran, the top-selling artist in England, 1.7 million sold, the biggest-selling album in the UK since that Adele blockbuster, 21, back in 2011. And then Sam Smith with In the Lonely Hour in second place with 1.2 million copies. You've also got some of the usual suspects in that top 10, Coldplay and once again One Direction with a top 10 album. And then your favorite, Jim, I think you'll be pleased to know that Pink Floyd had a top 10 album in the UK this year.
That's pretty good for not having done any work in a couple of decades. You know, Greg, when the Walkman first debuted in 1979, that was the sort of tune people were listening to, the Knack's My Sharona. That's a long time ago. We first started carrying around this little cassette player the size of a brick in our pocket, courtesy of Sony. Now Sony is reintroducing the Walkman, one of the big news stories out of the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. This one is called the NWZX2 Walkman. It is not your grandma's Walkman. This thing is Bluetooth and Wi-Fi compatible. It's got 128 gigs of memory, Greg, expandable to 256, 60 hours of battery life. It's a lot smaller. And its big selling point is that it can, quote, reproduce master quality recordings just as the artists originally intended. Given the ubiquity of cell phones carrying people's music, it's so easy now. Where do the electronics manufacturers go next? They seem to be turning to high fidelity. Now, this new Walkman is going to go for $1,100. Wow. That's a piece of change, okay? Slightly cheaper, but even better, allegedly, according to Neil Young, is his Pono music player. People may remember we talked about this a while back. Neil Young gave a big speech at South by Southwest last year introducing this new digital audio file system that he said was going to sound much, much better, as good as vinyl, right? And then he had a Kickstarter campaign to fund it. Now the Pono music player should start appearing in stores in February. That's going for only $399. It doesn't do nothing else. Doesn't hook up to anything else. It simply plays good-sounding music. Can't play no games, can't call anybody, can't text anybody. Neil says this is what it should be about. I didn't listen to music for the last 15 years because I hated the way it sounded and it made me ticked off that I couldn't enjoy it anymore. Now he says he has the solution. Listening to Sound Opinions, and that's the song Rent I Pay by our guest this week, Spoon. That tune opens up Spoon's eighth and most recent album, They Want My Soul. And still at four since founding Spoon in 1996 are singer Britt Daniel and drummer Jim Eno. For this effort, they're joined by Rob Pope on bass and Eric Harvey and Alex Fischel on keyboards.
But Jim, while Daniel and Eno remain consistent, Spoon's sound has definitely evolved. Early releases really emphasize that angular post-punk influence, but I've noticed as they've gotten older, they've also gotten more soulful. So let's get into our conversation with the band from when they visited our studio. I wanted to know why there was such a big lag between 2010's Transference and the latest release. They toured that record for many years, and with successful side projects like Divine Fits, I wondered if we'd even get more Spoon.
We needed a break, is all. And so I took a couple months where I did mostly nothing and then decided to start a band with Dan Beckner. And once I knew that was happening, then I can't remember if I called up or I emailed these guys and I was like, I'm going to do this thing, but whenever it's done, we're going to make another record.
Most people don't take a vacation and then start another job.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we just all needed some new experiences, I think. I mean, we put out a lot of records fairly fast and had just been doing it as soon as we were getting to be done with a tour, then we're writing songs, and then we're recording songs, and you were just constantly doing that for a long time. It was good to just take a break.
But you guys have been able to pretty much play, make up your rules as you went along. You know, independent band, built up the career kind of at a grassroots DIY level. How do you get into that trap where, you know, the touring does become endless, and it does become sort of exhausting? Is that a position you feel like you're sort of boxed into? Or, you know, how does that work where you end up at a point where you just feel like you're at the end of your rope with a band?
You know? Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on how healthy you are and what kind of substances you're putting in your body and how long you've been doing it. It does seem like people, the tendency is for bands to tour more now, right? And then maybe that's because that's the only place that people make money.
Well, that's a great point.
Bands,
I mean, there is a myth out there, I think, that bands only make money on the road. Maybe it's not a myth. I've heard that repeated just yesterday again. And now I'm hearing that bands aren't making what everybody thinks they are on the road either. It's
right.
You know, there's other revenue streams that need to be sought. But in your case, the band's at a certain level where you felt like, you know, in order to make this record pay off, you needed to stay out on the road for
That was just, yeah, we were just used to working real hard on promoting our records as much as we could. And I kind of felt like halfway, through the year of working on touring Transference, I was like, maybe this one doesn't want to be toured as long as Gaga 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 did, you know? It was a different type of record.
Mm-hmm.
But we still had months down to go, you know, and so we kept going for a while, and then that's when it got a little
exhausting.
Yeah.
And everybody needed a break. Jimmy, you know, on drums, you're the second longest-lived member of Spoon, and you were producing records. Well, not lived. I mean, you're all alive, obviously. Second longest rank, right?
Tenured.
Tenured.
There's the word.
Word from academia.
Yeah.
I got my watch.
I think you're actually the president, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
Of Spoon Incorporated?
Yeah.
LLC?
Snuck that in somehow.
You were producing other bands. What did that,
right.
You know, we have a good idea. Britt was here with Divine Fits and was talking mm-hmm. about the different, you know, collaborating with different people. What did you get from working with other bands behind the board?
I mean, I feel like I learned something new with every project, so I just tried to do as many different things and as many varied things as possible. You know, like the Chick 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 record on one hand, and I did a gospel record, I did a jazz B3 record, you know, I did telekinesis records, so I'm trying to just...
That's a diverse palette.
Yeah, I was trying to just do as many different things as possible, because I feel like even if you're working with, say, a B3 trio or something, that's going to relate somehow to some rock project someday.
So you guys are going to play a song, right? What are we going to hear, Britt?
Oh, we're going to play Knock Knock Knock.
Cool.
All right. You guys ready?
Yeah.
One, two, three, four. Red, the film is done. After hours is on, and I better make another one. If you miss the meaning this time, here comes another one. Well, if you clap your hands, the man will fall. Hold your breath to shake himself to death. And the seas get rearranged. The words aren't said.
every time I hear knock, knock, knock. I know that tune. To blame nobody but you. Your hand is on the tree and you know it's going to blow. But you don't give a damn, don't care who's gonna know. You just want everyone to talk slow.
Knock, Knock, Knock from Spoon, live on Sound Opinions. Check out the video of this song at soundopinions.org. We'll have more with Britt Daniel and the band in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. And later, we'll review the new release from the Divine Styler.
Standing on that, and if I, so out of the way, it's the
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And our guest this week is Spoon. We've said this before on the show, but it's worth noting one more time because it's so rare. Spoon is one of the few consistently good bands to release successful albums over a 20-year span. But with all that consistency comes expectations. Britt Daniel, the lead singer, decided to confound those expectations by doing a couple of side projects between 2010 and the release of their latest record, 2014's They Want My Soul, including Sound Opinion's guest Divine Fitz with Wolf Parade singer Dan Beckner. Here's Britt telling us how he transitioned back to focusing on Spoon.
I still had a bit of touring left to go. I could see it was going to be ending soon, and I wanted to get started. So I suggested to these guys that why don't they get together, write some music, and then maybe I'll sing on top of it. We've never written it. We've never done songs like that before. So I think maybe they were a little skeptical.
No.
Jim is nodding.
Yeah,
I wasn't
very
skeptical.
But they came up with some amazing stuff, maybe three or four great tracks, and then one of them ended up being Outlier, which is just, it's got a different sound.
So Dave Fridman, longtime producer of The Flaming Lips, Mercury Rev, up in scenic Fredonia.
Oh, yeah.
What was that experience like? Why did you go to him? And Ciccarelli, Joe Ciccarelli, played as big a role, it looks like, from the credits. So it was the two of them working on this record.
I knew who Dave Fridman was for a long time, but he kept turning out more and more records that I just loved. Like, you remember that record, The Great Destroyer by Lowe?
Yeah.
And I loved that Flaming Lips record, Embryonic. Mm-hmm. That had just kind of happened. And then my friend Janet Weiss from Sleater-Kinney was talking about what he was like as a producer. And I said, that sounds like the guy. So I got in touch with him, and it took a long time to wear him down because he's very busy. But eventually.
Well, yeah, and originally he was just going to mix.
Yeah, he was just going to mix, but then we ended up doing the second half of, he ended up producing the second half of the record. We did it in two halves this time.
Well, yeah. I want to jump in here because I want to ask Jim, what was it like to sort of turn over the reins, as it were, to another producer who's got a name and a sound? You can hear the Dave Fridman production style.
Right, but one thing about Dave is that he knows that it's not his record. He may go in some direction or, like mixing, he may throw the kitchen sink at it and we walk in and we're like, whoa. But he's cool on sort of stripping stuff back if the band isn't into it. You know, it's not his record. It's ours.
Did you have any arguments with him in regard to that? Because, you know, the compression and everything, it's a signature of his style. And I don't hear that as much on this record. It seemed like he had paid attention to what you guys were doing as well.
You know, the only argument I remember is he was cool about everything until we asked him, there's a cough on one song. What song was that?
Let Me Be Mine.
And we wanted to pan the cough a different direction. And he's like, okay, man, no way. That cough is staying right there.
You know? He was actually upset about it. He was like, for once, I'm going to put my foot down.
Yeah, exactly.
This really cannot happen. So I think we wanted it centered, and he wanted it to the right.
Yeah, ribs. Yeah. And he's like, it throws the entire mix off.
Studio
it just throws the entire mix off. He's like, you're not moving it. And we're like, whoa, all right, dude, you got this one. We'll give you this one.
Wow, of all the things to go to the mat for.
Yeah,
it's not like take it out. It's unprofessional or leave it in.
It was just panning. Yeah.
There were a couple of moments where he said, maybe something was really loud, and we were like, man, that's a little loud. And he's like, let it be loud, let it be overwhelming.
The other classic thing he would say is like, Dave, do you think this is too distorted? And he'd always be like, well, I'm the wrong person to ask about that.
He's like, I don't even know if it's distorted. I can't. I don't notice if it's distorted.
He's like, I don't even like it if it's not distorted.
I work with the Flaming Lips. I don't know the meaning of distortion.
Right, yeah.
Well, how about another song from you guys?
All right.
I can't remember. What are we
doing? Are we doing Raining Taxi?
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
You want to do that next?
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Rainy Taxi by Spoon on Sound Opinions. Man, oh man. Britt, I was joking before I let in my review when I reviewed this album, which Greg and I both loved. I said, you know, everybody's always talking about Britt Daniel. You know, it's a pretty boy front man. Right? And there is this cult.
Really? Is that right?
There is this cult.
Thank you for giving us that one.
But I thought the stars of this album were Jim, the master of those very Spoon-like rhythms, and Alex. And you were doing the, you know, you were both sweetening the pot on that song we just heard with those really neat little keyboard flourishes.
Thank you.
You seem to be the icing on the cake guy this time around. Was that how you saw your role coming into this band?
I thought more of sprinkles. But yeah.
Cupcake sprinkles, yeah. Well, Eric and Alex, I think both a big part of this record in terms of the keyboards. I was curious about that. You get into some new territory with songs like Outlier, for example, where, you know, there's a definite swing there towards something, towards new territory for Spoon. And is this something that you guys sort of said, okay, let's experiment a little bit more, let's break out of the traditional bounds that maybe we see Spoon in and try some new stuff? And I believe that was one of the tracks where the band contributed, right?
Yeah, we didn't have that conversation about it. It was just pretty simple. Like one day Britt was like, oh, I think I got some lyrics for this one, I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, I just loved the track. I knew I had to make something out of it, with some kind of vocal on top of it.
And was it because it was a little different? I mean, were you hearing that?
I just loved it. It reminded me of like a rockin', like a the Cocteau Twins, but with a band, you know, like a like the Cure meets Cocteau Twins at their most like post punk. You know? That's what the track reminded me of.
You were smart. You played no part. You just thought. What you thought, yeah. And I remember when you walked out of Garden State, 'cause you had taste, you had no time to waste.
What I'm hearing in this record is development. You've been together, what, 15 some years?
Something
now
like that.
And you don't often see bands at that stage of their careers sort of going outside the box that has already been, you know, prescribed for them.
Mm.
And I take it you're a little aware of that, Britt, in terms of...
I guess so. It's not something we discuss very often, but I remember there was... the next song we're going to play is called Do You, and there was a version early on that was sort of like... had the Kinks beat, what we call the Kinks beat, sort of like that. You know, dun, 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 dun. And we had it working, but... after a while, I was just like, guys, we can do better than this. We've done this before, you know?
Yeah.
It's not something we really address, but I guess it's probably in the back of our minds.
We have another song ready, right, gents?
Yeah, this one's called Do You.
It's late in October and tar still melting the street.
tiptoe for ages, but lose yourself, flipping back pages or buckling belts. All love, that's the way love comes. Oh, do you, don't you know that's the way love comes? Do you feel it black and blue? Oh, do you, 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 do
by Spoon on Sound Opinions. We're in the studio with Britt Daniel, Jim Eno, Rob Pope, Eric Harvey, Alex Fischel. All right, we got sidetracked. We breezed past this before. You said we wanted to do this album in two halves, Britt. What was the thinking about that, and how did that play out?
I think there's a couple of things. I think originally the idea might have come around just because of scheduling, getting everybody we wanted to work with. But then the more that the idea was around, I gravitated towards it because, I mean, the idea of starting to work on a whole album is daunting,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And just
pressure's on now, boys.
Instead, just doing five songs or six songs is, that's, you know, a little more manageable. That really was the kicker for me.
You're a pretty prolific songwriter, and yet it seems like every once in a while you pull out these really cool covers. I Just Don't Understand is an example of that.
Yeah.
Not exactly first on the list of songs that you see being referenced in the last, you know, 20 years. Where did you come up with that?
Well, there's this website, Rookie. It's based in Chicago, right?
Oh, yeah.
And,
Tommy,
you know, Jessica Hopper, she's the music editor there. And she wanted me to do the song of the month, which was, I can't remember what the theme was, but somehow it related to, like, girl pop singers from the 60s. And so she gave me a list of songs. I only knew a couple of them. I sang them all into a recorder. And I picked the one that I thought sounded best, and that was that one. And we decided we'd just do a quickie version because it was just going to be for a website. But we started recording it, Jim and I, and we just put the guitar and drum down, and it was like immediately too good for, it was too good for Rookie.
Will you call me your baby when you're holding my hand? But the way that you hurt me, I just don't understand. Well, you say that you need me like the ocean needs sand, but the way you mistreat me, I just don't understand.
No, well, then I recorded another song for
you gave them
what was the other
inferior
song?
Love Letters.
Who was that by?
I don't know who wrote it, but it's, you know, the song from the Blue Velvet soundtrack.
Oh, okay, all right.
At the end when they come in and the yellow man is standing there like frozen and
this
bittersweet song comes on. It's just a beautiful moment.
Was popularized by Anne Margaret.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Beatles, I guess, did cover it on the BBC sessions, right?
Yeah.
And never actually
somehow
ended up
I didn't put the two together.
Right.
I must have heard it somewhere before, but I didn't remember that.
Well, it brings out a side to your singing, too, that I don't think people have appreciated. Because, you know, the words that always get attached to Spoon are, you know, angular, minimalist, a little bit elliptical. There's a little bit more emotion in the vocal delivery, if I can be so bold as to say that on this record. I'm just feeling a little bit more soul.
Yeah, I feel like ever since, you know, Girls Can Tell or so, I started trying to sing a little bit more, with a little more soul, to, for lack of a better word. first couple records were more sort of shouty songs the whole time, you know. But yeah, I'm into that. So I'm glad you pointed it out.
I have another geeky fan question. Jonathan Fisk, one of my favorite songs was it Kill the Moonlight, right?
Right.
That person reappears on this record, in the title track of this record, right?
Yeah.
They Want My Soul.
That's right.
Educated folk singers want my soul. Jonathan Fisk wants my soul.
What is it with this Jonathan Fisk dude? Why does he keep showing up?
It made sense for the song, you know? And I kind of think that self-referencing your own lyrics is kind of a cool lost art, you know?
The walrus was Paul.
Right, that kind of thing. That's I always loved that.
Mm-hmm. But it's not a name you just pick out of a hat, right? It has some meaning for you?
Well, the song, you know, the song They Want My Soul is sort of about soul suckers in general. And so it started off with sort of like about religious soul suckers. And then I kind of opened it up to, you know, educated folk singers. And then another person who might have been a soul sucker in my past was this guy, Jonathan Fisk. It was a made up name, but a real guy. No, I actually like the guy, Jonathan Fisk. We eventually became friends. We were sparring partners, or not much of them, but I didn't do much sparring, but. Yeah, that was like middle school. We were fighting it out.
And, wow.
But then later on, he kind of came around. He got less into heavy metal and became kind of like an adamant liberal. And then for some reason, we were like friends, you know?
So does he get a backstage pass to every Spoon gig?
I haven't seen him in like 10 years.
Oh, okay.
But he, for a while, he did come to a lot of our shows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
We get high in backseats of cars. We break into
We want to thank Spoon, Britt, Jim, Rob, Eric, and Alex for being in on Sound Opinions. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
To watch video of Spoon's entire performance, visit us at soundopinions.org. And we want to hear from you. What is your favorite Spoon album? Why have they been able to keep it going for so long? And who else has that kind of track record? Call 888-859-1800. Coming up, a review of the new album from rapper Divine Styler, and Greg drops a quarter into the Desert Island Jukebox.
We seek out the taciturn. Let's do where we get by, to where we get by. All that, where we get by, to where we get by. Let's do where we get by, to where we get by.
Knowledge of all things, personified radical of rhyme in more ways than diagrams, geometric signs and thought waves. Respect the fact I'm blowing your retina, don't shot your brain clot and amp the spectrum. Monotone G-force divine selection, energetic darts with the mic extension.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. That is the title track from the new album by Divine Styler, Deaf Mask. Many people, Greg, are asking themselves, who is Divine Styler? I had him lost in the Bermuda Triangle. Remember when we did that show a while back? A really interesting cult figure from late 80s, early 90s hip-hop. born Mark Richardson in Brooklyn, eventually converted to Islam. In fact, he converted everlast to Islam, to that religion, became Michael Safiullah at that point, but is best known as this very spiritual, pseudo-psychedelic, hip-hop bizarro artist, okay? A lot of people have made comparisons to people like Lee Scratch Perry or Sun Ra. He always said, Richardson, that his heroes were Jimi Hendrix, King Crimson, and Nick Drake. Really interesting mix for a hip-hop artist. He originally was part of the Ice-T Rhyme Syndicate world. He released his best-known album in 1991, the year punk broke, up there with Nirvana, I thought, Spiral Walls Containing Autumns of Light. But he has been missing almost entirely from the music scene for 14 years, just a stray guest appearance here or there. He made the point that the negativity that has come to dominate hip-hop was really dragging him down. He has always been a very spiritual and positive person, and now he is releasing this album, first one, as I said, in 14 years, that is kind of a concept effort, sort of inspired by a Blade Runner or The Matrix, okay, about the masks that we are operating behind in society. Let's play a track, and then we'll come back and give our reviews. This is Pandorum by Divine Styler from Death Mask on Sound Opinions.
Immaterial braille, feel my death sign. My superior depth is deeper than next line. I will never fold to the pressure in these times. Holler at your boy for not repeating the coke rhyme. Fly, ride a sky, grammar, effortless conduct. Aerial articulates defeating the construct. Dumb it down, I raise it up to infinite somewhat. Pull back, attack on the rap, but not much. Begin again this time, let go your ligaments. Breathe while you listening. Exhale, reconnect, feel it in the abdominal, unstoppable. Molecules inside of you, vibing in solitude. No space and time, no slave to mind. No visual, the visible shape with lines. No fate design, no place to find. No object attached, just straight divine.
You know who I am, though, anyway. You know, King, what? King style. I got styles already that's more complex than nobody know about. I mean, super duty tough work. See, this is just semi like what I would call it. But if I really get into it and start camouflaging it, I don't think you'd even be able to read it.
Entering the stage from the Emperor's cage. Lifetime of servitude, infamous ways. For days and days, gaze at the frame with rage. The illusion has been proven in exact remains. All pain is a mind state, negative sine wave. Ghost from the past of a criminal rhyme game. The star child of falsified, imminent hope game. Hanging from the industry with the rope name. Euthanasia, pre-crime, invisible sure name. Above ground war game, identity always. Lurking in the shadow of the light with your shape. Be given in the dark child inferior domain. To analyze speech, crime, data, my street rhyme. Thought, word to action, baffling. Sleep eyes, watch a dream town, redeem your lean side, awaken from the gaslight machine in decline.
Pandorum from the new Divine Styler record, Death Mask. If you're into that whole Afrofuturistic tradition at all, I'm talking about Sun Ra, George Clinton, Janelle Monae, this is right in that pocket. But it's kind of a red herring because, you know, he sets up this sort of futuristic soundscape with very sci-fi oriented lyrics. But I think what he's really talking about is what's going on in our culture right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes it really interesting. We are living in a cultural prison but don't know it. It's kind of a Matrix type of scenario. You know, he sets the whole record up with this premise. When you discover who you really are, you are indestructible. You are free. And that's a, you know, apparently an optimistic message. But what he's really talking about is we can never really find out who we are because there's so many people out here telling us different things.
Well, that's where the Matrix thing comes
in.
We're all plugged into this machine and we can't get to the truth.
Yes, we're in the machine and we don't know it. Biogenetic engineering, brainwashing, references to the Manchurian Candidate, mm-hmm. Philip K. Dick. I mean, this guy, if you like your cinematic and literary references, this guy is just neck deep in him on this record. More multisyllabic words than you're likely to hear on any pop record, maybe ever. I mean, the guy is just a genius with wordplay, very dense. Similarly with the soundscapes, similarly with the way the music is constructed. You've got these big brother voices in the background. You've got the sound of children laughing in a playground against these very robotic kind of scenarios. It's very chilling, disturbing, just throws you into this world. And then when you come out at the end of it, you go, wow, that was an experience. A heavy-duty record from Divine Styler. I can't recommend it enough. It's a buy it all the way.
I've been a fan of this guy from the beginning, Greg, and I've often complained that hip-hop has lost both the lyrical and musical ambition that we saw in that early 90s period of alternative hip-hop, with notable exceptions. People like DJ Shadow and the Run to Jewels collaboration, mm-hmm. right? And the music is that good, and the lyrics are that ambitious here. I can't recommend it highly enough. Also a buy it for me.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
You remember, we were shipwrecked together.
As often as possible here on Sound Opinions, one of us likes to take a trip to the desert island and pop a quarter in the jukebox, playing you a track we cannot live without. Greg, it's your turn to paraglide out there to paradise. What do you got?
Jim, I wanted to pay tribute to one of the great hip-hop producers, maybe the first great hip-hop producer. I'm talking about Larry Smith, and the reason I'm doing that is that he died a few weeks ago at the age of 62. We weren't able to catch up with his obituary in time for the holidays, but I wanted to reference him now. And in some ways, he's sort of been written out of the history. People forget the incredible role he had in designing what hip-hop came to be. He co-wrote the first big hip-hop hit, Curtis Blow's The Breaks. He co-wrote that hugely sampled song by Jimmy Spicer, Money, Dollar Bill, Y'all, that's been sampled. I mean, you've heard that song billion times, and Larry Smith had a huge hand in that. He started collaborating with Russell Simmons with a new group called Run DMC. And what they did in the studio with that sound really separated hip-hop from its roots in disco, R&B, reggae. It was its own thing after Larry Smith and Russell Simmons got done with it. They really stripped it down to beats and rhymes. The essence of hip-hop was what was going on in the streets, in the parks, in the house parties of New York. And that's what these guys wanted the studio records to sound like. The only parallel for that sound, I think, at the time, you know, 83, 84, you're talking about like Suicide out in New York, this really minimalist, brutally stripped down sound, or a punk band like Bad Brains. Those were the only real parallels to what Run DMC was doing with these machines. Now, Larry Smith could play. He was a darn good bass player, and he played in sessions with other musicians. But he said, you know, all we need is a drum machine, and we need those voices like a drum coming at you, hammering at you. Little splashes of synthesizer over the top, but not much more than that. And that minimalist perfection was achieved on their first Run DMC single, which led off Run DMC's debut album in 1984. And here is that track. Run DMC, as produced by Larry Smith, It's Like That on Sound Opinions. It's Like That by Run DMC in tribute to the late producer Larry Smith. Greg, what do we have on the show next week? Next week, Jim, we have an in-studio conversation with the great R&B singer Mary J. Blige.
Sound Opinions is produced by Jason Saldana, Robin Lin, and Evan Chung. Our intern is Alex Claiborne. And special thanks this week to Mary Gaffney, Colin Ashmead-Bobbitt, and Andrew Gill. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So now it's time to hear what you have to say.
Come on and
answer your phone. Answer your phone. Pick up the receiver. I know that you're at home. Answer your phone. Answer your phone. You can spend the rest of your life all alone.
New messages.
Hello, my name is Gordo, calling from Lawrence, Kansas. I'm calling in regard to your show about the history of Bloodshot Records 20th anniversary show. It's a good show, I enjoyed it, but I got to tell you, I was always disappointed that few bands get left out. In particular, Split-Lip Rayfield is probably the most legendary band out of that whole cow punk or alternative bluegrass, whatever you want to call it, movement.
Find your lover undercover.
They released their first four albums on Bloodshot, and they're all top-notch. They're categorized as bluegrass, but they do a whole lot more than that. They're just beautifully brutal, and I've enjoyed them for many, many years. Enjoy the show. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Dan calling from Philadelphia. I was enjoying the mixtape show, as always. I was surprised that Greg's mixtape did not include Tove Lo's Habits, Stay High. Would have really fit in very well with his theme of agony and ecstasy, and also would have fit in well with the tempo of most of the songs in his list. Keep on doing your great work. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Lee calling from Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. I just listened to your show talking about people who've passed away this year, and I had to contribute my two cents about Isaiah Ikey Owens, one of the most dynamic keyboardist I've ever seen play live before. I saw him with the Mars Volta several times back in their heyday. If anyone hasn't seen him play before, I encourage you to check out some YouTube clips or something, because, my God, he was a powerhouse. He passed away earlier this year while on tour with Jack White's band. Anyway, rest in peace, Ikey, and Happy New Year, everybody.
Hi, I have a kind of an underappreciated artist, the New Zealand scene that was kind of a progenitor of the Dunedin sound in New Zealand in the early 80s up until probably the mid-90s, Pierre Guttridge just passed away. I just wanted to talk about how he was probably one of the more influential songwriters of the rock scene in New Zealand. That was in the 80s. He was in The Clean, he was in The Chills, all of the famous bands that are from Dunedin in the 80s, and one of the best songwriters and one of my most missed artists that just passed away this year.
No more messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.